of the Living Geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podcastica, a Doctor Who podcast on the Night of the Living Geeks Network. I am your host. My name is John, and joining me, as always, is my good friend Taylor. Taylor, how's it going?
It's going well, man. Keeping busy. How about yourself?
I am doing quite well. It's been a busy week. By the time you hear this, Comic-Con will be over, but we're trying to keep up with all the good stuff that is going on. So, yeah, it's indeed keeping busy. Good old busyness. But today...
I have busyness, actually.
Really?
I do.
Oh, okay.
I do. I'm trying to remember. Did I mention before that for Father's Day, my wife had gotten me a Pebble smartwatch?
No, you did not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she got me a Pebble smartwatch. Now, we had actually gotten her... one for Mother's Day, but it actually didn't ship until very recently and just arrived today.
Oh, geez.
Late Mother's Day gift. I know. Thank you. But she got me one. And I have to say, it's the Pebble Time. It's a color screen, which is really cool. There are multiple Doctor Who themed watch faces.
Are there really?
You can load. Yeah, I've got one right now. And it's a 3D shot of the TARDIS. And the actual time is reflected in the four windows that you can see, because you're looking at the TARDIS at a corner.
So you
can see two sides of it. And so with four windows, you can display the time.
Oh, man.
I'm looking at that right now. It's really cool.
That's so cool. Oh, that's amazing. Now I want one. Man.
Oh, the price isn't too bad on them, and they work with both iOS and Android.
Maybe I'll look into that. But
anyway, this, what do we have for tonight?
Tonight we have The Idiot's Lantern, which was episode 7 of season 2, which was Tennant's debut season. It first aired on May 27th, 2006. Oh my goodness, that was a long time ago. And
wasn't it?
It was written by Mark Gatiss, directed by Eros Lynn, and starred David Tennant as the Doctor and Billy Piper as Rose. And it was set in London, 1953, at the time of Elizabeth II's coronation.
Yep.
Would you like to... you have some Twitter shout-outs here. Would you like to...
I did. I added some Twitter shout-outs because I always encourage people, or we both encourage people, to engage with us and the show.
Yes.
On Twitter. And we thank you, Twitterverse, for doing so. But when I get notifications, like if you have me tagged in a posting for podcast, again, I see that other people have retweeted or replied to it. I just wanted to give a couple shout-outs just to say thanks.
Yeah.
Because it's appreciated. So the first one goes to, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, and I'm sorry ahead of time. It's Jen Maika.
Jen Machina? There's no N.
AI, I don't know. See, English major. I'm like, no, the vowels should be doing a certain thing. So I'm saying Jen Maika. And if it is Jen Maika, I'm sorry. Otherwise known as @Phil14Sketchbook. Thank you for retweeting and engaging with the show. It's very awesome. And Zanna, who you've actually noticed, is actually Alex.
Yes.
Co-host of Super Segoy Cast.
Yeah.
@ShadowPuppets with a Z.
Yeah, she does a lot of good work for us. She is a team player at NOTLG for sure. And if you are interested in Japanese culture or anime or anything like that, you should go check out Super Segoy Cast for sure.
Absolutely.
Great show.
Thank you, Alex, for that. Thank you for the engagement.
Thank you to both of you. That's awesome.
Thank you, everyone, for retweeting. And feel free to ask us questions or suggest shows or anything.
Yes, please do.
We're easy that way.
Yeah, we'll do whatever. We don't care. So, Taylor, why don't you give us the short and sweet synopsis of The Idiot's Lantern?
Oh, short and sweet. Is the sweet a hungry reference? Is that where we're going with this?
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. It's 1953, the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II, but there's something hiding in the televisions of the British people. Yes, they're vacuum tubes, because it's 1953. No, something hungry. And that is the entirety of the synopsis, which is, I think, even worse than what we had last week.
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed it was. So you got a couple of notes written down here. If you'd like to, let's go through those before we get into the top and funny five.
Yeah, yeah. What I have of note, the Doctor and Rose were actually aiming to land in New York City 1956 in order to see young Elvis, because you don't want to see the chubby one.
Right.
On the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yes, that was great. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the whole banter right at the beginning of that, the episode about that, was so funny.
Yes, it was fantastic.
later in the episode, the Doctor has climbed up a giant transmission antenna, and originally the script was supposed to have a line about having trouble with radio transmitters, and that's supposed to be a reference back to Legopolis.
Oh, because
Tom Baker's last.
Because he falls off, right?
Right. Yeah, he falls off this antenna.
Oh man.
Yeah, so unfortunately the line got cut, but I thought that would have been really cool. But hey, he doesn't fall off this one, so we'll call that a win.
We will call it a win.
Also, Magpie Electricals, which you see, you know, featured hugely in this episode,
actually, yes,
becomes something of an in-joke and is referenced in many, many episodes. There's references in the Martha Jones era. And I don't remember exactly what. I think it's like her folks have a TV, like there's some scene.
Oh, you know what?
I don't remember which episode.
I think I can nail it. It might be wrong. Do you remember? This is when we find out that the Master is actually running when he, you know, Vote Saxton, when he's running and she looks behind the TV and there's like a bomb on the TV.
You are absolutely right. It is Sound of Drums.
I think that's it.
I'm 99% sure it sounded
excellent.
That is a Magpie Electricals TV. the TARDIS itself, after Tennant's last episode, The End of Time,
yes,
when it rebuilds itself for Matt Smith, some of the parts in the TARDIS are labeled Magpie Electricals.
Oh, that's funny.
And then lastly, in the episode The Beast Below with the space whale,
mm-hmm,
or space manatee, whatever it is, and the whole of the UK is riding on its back, there's apparently a giant sign that says Magpie Electricals.
That's very interesting. I didn't know that. The last note I actually put down, and I thought the similarities between the scene with all the faces on the television, it was very reminiscent to the Matt Smith episode, The Bells of St. John, with all the faces on the television. I thought that was very interesting.
You know what? That's a really good point. And not only that, but the baddie, let's say, in Idiot's Lantern, The Wire,
yes,
is basically kind of like sucking people's consciousness.
Yeah.
And they do display on the TV. And if I'm right, in The Bells of St. John, basically what they were doing is they were sucking these people's consciousnesses through the Wi-Fi. They were basically doing what? The Wire? I hadn't even thought about that, dude. That's epic.
I thought about
that's
it.
Fantastic connection
with all the TVs. I was, and her saying Doctor, but instead of, we couldn't hear these people, but you could hear the people in The Bells of St. John, like, I don't know where I am, you know, what's going on. So yeah, I thought that was very oddly similar, and I had actually was like, man, if Mark Gatiss wrote this episode too, that's gonna be really weird. But he did not. I think Moffat actually wrote it.
Well,
yeah,
to Moffat to take another idea and co-opt it. Did I say that?
You said it.
Okay, I'll own it. I said it.
So, Taylor, let us get into the, I guess, the funny and top five. Once again, I think I did. So this time I think I did pretty good on the top five. My funny five, I only actually have four.
Well, that's all right, because I only have four as well.
Oh, look at that. I actually did not see that. And actually, one of mine, you know, I'm just going to take the reins here. My number four is actually more of a creepy, I guess it would be a funny three, a creepy one, and a fave five.
I think you're overcomplicating it slightly.
I am just a little bit, but bear with me. The faceless people in the cage was super creepy to me for some reason. Mainly because the doctor is in the dark in a cage with a bunch of people who don't have faces, and it was just really creepy to me.
Well, yeah. That, I think that would be creepy to anyone. The whole idea of seeing another person's face, I mean, that is like hard-coded into our DNA.
Yeah.
That we expect to see two eyes, a nose, a mouth, in that order from top to bottom, you know, with very minor variations. So to see absolutely nothing, it is jarring.
Yeah, it is very jarring, and especially when they all start coming towards him at once. That's also very creepy. So I didn't know where to put that, but it ended up as my funny number four. I don't know how.
You know, I think that works.
How about you?
You know, honestly, this was an episode that for me kind of reminded me how the psychic paper and the sonic screwdriver have kind of become MacGuffins. It's just almost a nonsensical tool to just move the plot forward.
Yes.
And rather than doing something, what's the right word I want to say? I'm going to say more mature.
Okay.
It's so easy. I'm going to sneak up to the store. Oh, dear. It's locked. Zap. Oh, now I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay, come on. Yes, every now and then, sure. And I think I've said this before, but there's so many other ways that you could write something like that. And the psychic paper, it's good in a pinch. It's good in something serious. Like in this episode, okay, it works when they're at the Connollys, and it's like, oh, we're here to inspect your patriotism.
Yes, which I will talk about later. Yes.
Okay, that's a good scene.
Yes.
But when he is running into what's it called, Alexandra Palace, where the TV transmitter is, and he just flashes it at
that guy. Yes.
And he's like, oh, sorry, King of Belgium.
Yes.
Really? Why not just have the doctor run by, not flash anything, because he doesn't care. He's trying to save the flipping world.
Yes. I will say this about the Sonic. Yes, he did use it to get into, you know, various doors. But I believe when he went to Magpie's, he actually punched through the window and opened the door.
Okay, yes, he did do that. So,
which was very weird.
I don't think he pulled in the Sonic at that time.
No, he just punched through the... I think that's when he saw Faceless Rose.
Yes.
Before we get to Faceless Rose, I want to talk about Mr. Connolly's method of punishing his son, Tommy. Mm-hmm. He punishes his son. He basically says, if you keep acting up, you're not going to college. Which I thought was just like a weird punishment to give someone. Like,
yeah, it is.
You will not be educated because you're disobeying me. You're gonna come and work with me. Okay, that's really weird. I don't know. I just thought that was really funny when he's like, no college.
You know, I agree. I think, at least from our perspective, you know, in the early 21st century, that seems like a really weird punishment. But in 1953, you know, we're just a few years after World War II.
Yes.
You know, we've got this new kind of middle class that I think, I can bet you anything, Mr. Connolly probably didn't go to college. And so I'm sure on some level he does want something better for his son. And so maybe that is a bigger deal then.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I didn't take that into account, that it was actually a different, you know, this is Doctor Who. We're usually in a different part of time and space. I just thought it was just so weird.
And, but I mean, to just hear it right off the bat, you're like, really? No.
But I mean, Mr. Connelly in general is just, he is is he a character?
That is probably the nicest way to put it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is probably the best way to put it. Your next funny moment that you recall and would like to commiserate.
So my number three is tied a little bit to your number one, so I won't go too deep into it. But the wire's whining because she's so hungry. it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I can deal with hearing it a couple of times.
Yes. Kinda
like when my kids whine, but to hear it every few seconds.
Oh, geez.
I was like, okay, lady, I'm going to put you in a timeout. and the visual effects of the face sucking, the whole kind of rose tinted lightning that she had, I can't remember if I saw it originally and went, wow, that's really good. But looking at it almost 10 years later, it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of cheap looking.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the visual effects were something too. They were something, I guess.
I'm sure they spent those visual effects dollars on something else much more awesome that season.
Well, probably the Satan thing.
Oh, the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit, the next two episodes.
Yeah, that's
probably, because I remember that was pretty well done.
Yeah, well, let's see if our memory is better when we eventually get to that.
Totally. What about your number two?
So my number two is Faceless Rose. And mainly Faceless Rose is funny to me because I have watched those outtakes where they try to film that scene where he first sees her, and Tenet is just laughing every time. Like, he laughs every time he tries to do it. And then, of course, Billy Piper starts to laugh, and it's just really funny. So even watching that scene the first time, even thinking about it right now, is just really, really funny to me. And yeah, that's the only reason why.
That's always worth trying to find outtakes, because they're so, so fantastic.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Most of the time. I remember being, obviously, I was very much into the X-Files 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
There was actually a group of us. We would get together every, whatever it was, Friday night or Sunday night.
Sunday night, sir, at 9 p.m.
Hang out. Well, they jumped it around a couple of times.
I believe for the most part it was on, well, when I remember watching it with my dad, it was on Sundays at 9 o'clock.
Okay, fair enough. But we would get together and we would hang out and we'd, you know, have food and bring snacks. And then we'd watch the episode and we'd talk about the show and everything. And this was almost pre-internet. This was like internet infancy.
Right.
Like, this was like, you know, alt message boards, you know, Usenet and stuff like that. I'm really dating myself here. But it was one of those things where somebody managed to get, you know, a couple of seasons worth of blooper reels on like a third generation copy VHS.
Oh, man.
And we would sit there and we would watch them over and over again. So outtakes, yes. Anytime you can find outtakes, they're always fun.
Oh, yes, definitely. I love them. I even love sometimes to put them at the end of podcasts. That's how fun outtakes are.
Yes, I always enjoy those.
So, Taylor, you're number two.
My number two, hey now, is the doctor's wire trapping contraption.
Yes.
Say that three times fast. Again, in the long history of the doctor making the most random, fantastical things that go ding and trap alien creatures in a Betamax videotape.
Yes. Man.
It's one of those things where, I mean, when he pulled out the tape and he's like, I've trapped her on this. I'm like, oh, God, it's the ring on Betamax.
Yes. Oh, my God. Wow. It is.
It is.
He even when he's trying to help, he created a cursed videotape.
Well, yeah, Betamax did kind of fail.
True. So that's probably in the trash heap somewhere.
All right. What's your number one, John?
So my number one is hungry. I'm telling you, I completely forgot about that. And as soon as she said it, it was just like, it seemed so out of character, didn't it? Like, it seemed very weird.
I think it does, because here's this alien creature who has come to Earth and is trying to basically get enough people energy or whatever to reconstitute itself.
Like, yeah.
I don't even think it's actually female.
No, we don't get a gender, I think.
No, but it's so whiny.
Yes.
It's so childlike that I take it less seriously as a villain.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for the most part, and we'll get into it in my in one of my top fives, but for the most part, generally enjoyed The Wire, but I mean, that just kind of blew it a lot. It was just so annoying and just laughable. It was just very laughable.
It definitely became that, totally.
All right, so your number one.
So my number one, funny, kind of ties into my number five, top five. There's some overlap here, and it's Mr. Connolly the Bully. And it's one of those things that with this episode, I'm not saying that there weren't people like this in, you know, England at this time in history. You know, there's always that whole, like, at least over here, this stereotype of stiff upper lip and keeping up appearances and,
right.
You know, kind of, and I'm totally reaching here. I think that actually goes back to this whole, like, Victorian veneer where it's like, oh, we look all prim and proper, but under the surface, it's, you know, we're into some, you know, deep, dank stuff.
Yes.
Really trying to catch myself and not swear on this episode because this is happening a lot. So we've got Mr. Connolly almost, and I'm saying this from the top funny part, almost as a bit of a caricature that I'm going to say stereotype.
Yes.
Basically, just very, just overbearing. And I know you've got some good examples of that later, so I'm not going to jump on those, but just very overbearing. But you ultimately see in the episode, I mean, he's weak.
Yeah.
He's puffing himself up to try and look like the top dog, and he's not.
Nowhere near it.
No. But part of that, and so I'm just going to bridge this into my number five.
Yes, please do.
Is that caricature, that how they wrote him, and certainly how the actor acted it, just made him so infinitely hateable.
Yes.
In my mind. Having seen the episode before, obviously, he comes on screen now, and I just instantly, he makes my teeth itch.
Yeah, he's,
I instantly don't like him.
Yeah, he is something. There is nothing redeemable about him for the most part, but you know what's even weirder about this? At the end, you somehow, the show makes you kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
Which is fine, and I'll get into that in one of my top fives, but I mean, that's the beauty of Doctor Who, I guess. Forgiveness. No, yeah, I don't know. Forgiveness. So I think moving on from that, let us get to my number five, which I can't believe no one has mentioned yet. Blue Vespa.
Yeah, gotta love a Vespa.
I love it. That is just, I love that Rose comes out and she's like, oh, this is so fun, blah, blah, and the doctor's just like gone. He's back in the TARDIS, comes out in a blue Vespa, and is like, let's go. And
a long history of two-wheeled vehicles coming in and out of the TARDIS.
And you know what else is hilarious about this? What did we just talk about earlier? The Bells of St. John. What happens in the Bells of St. John? They ride on a motorcycle together.
You're absolutely right.
Wow.
I think when I'm finally able to get the rest of my family to kind of watch some some David Tennant episodes.
Yes.
Because we started with Matt Smith and went up from there. Mm-hmm. My wife's going to go nuts over the Vespa because she's always kind of wanted one. She's always kind of fancied them. And I think it's hilarious in this episode. At the very end, the doctor gives the Vespa to Tommy.
Yes. And but, says, leave it in the garage for like 5 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, because the Vespa hasn't been invented yet.
Yeah. Whoops. Oh, well.
Love it.
Your number four, sir.
My number four is I actually like the fact that we don't really get a whole lot of backstory about The Wire.
Yes.
I feel like in some episodes of Doctor Who, you know, here it is, you know, here's the monster of the week, basically. And we get this ginormous story, this ginormous reason for their motives.
Yes.
And so here's the Wire. Oh, you know, the Wire was a baddie on whatever. We don't even know what planet.
Nope.
We don't know what race they were called.
Mm-mm.
We just know that the Wire, that it is calling itself now.
Yeah.
Was a baddie, was executed, and that its, I presume, energy
mm-hmm.
traveled Earth in one way, shape, or form, and here it is trying to continue existing in a more physical form.
Yeah.
It's absolutely all we get to know, and that might frustrate some people, but I actually liked that.
Yeah, I did too. It was just kind of like, here I am, I need this, this is why I need it, that's all you need to know. It's not like thousands of years ago, my people, they came to Earth, and then, I don't know, they went on vacation, and now I'm back, and I hate everyone.
Well, it's not like getting all, like an entire half episode of backstory, like in City of Death.
Yes. Well, and then you also have to get into account that that's a classic Who, and they had 40 years to do one story.
That's true.
Could you imagine if classic Who was like, it was episodes like this, just like 45 minutes? That'd be so weird.
It would be very weird.
I mean, I'd be fine with it, but it'd make my job a lot easier, tell you that much.
But it would also mean that actually there's a lot less Doctor Who in terms of sheer minutes.
True. That's very true. Someone's job who was made very hard by this was Mr. Magpie, who asked for a miracle and then was incinerated at the end. But I did enjoy the design of his shop. I thought in the exterior it looked way out of place. Like, the rest of the buildings are all brick. And they look very nice. And his building is just black. Just pure black. It looks so out of place. And I almost wonder if it looked like that before the quote-unquote miracle of the Wire came and saved his shop.
That's a good question. I can tell you from having been to England, and I was visiting my brother who was actually attending a year at Oxford at the time. Makes it sound so hoity-toity.
Oh.
Sometimes you get architecture right next to each other from completely different eras, and you get some stuff that really just kind of visually clashes.
Huh.
But in terms of history, now granted, you look at this episode, and don't get me wrong, they did a fantastic job dressing the whole set to look like 1953.
Yeah.
I mean, from stem to stern, from top to bottom, you know, and that's just a row of like brick homes and stuff. So I don't know. I'd have to look at it again, but I have to wonder if they maybe just like, oh, here's the home on the corner, you know, let's just set dress it to look like a shop. Or like in many cases, you go down to the corner and there's, you know, the chemists or the news agent or,
right,
you know, the liquor store or whatever.
Yeah.
And they kind of had to dress it based on that. But you're right. I think that they very intentionally made much of that black. Because that is where the villain is.
Yes. I actually didn't really think about that. But I also loved the logo design. I thought the logo was very nice for some reason. And the interior of the shop, it looked very gloomy. And it had all the old TVs. Well, I guess new TVs if we're, you know, whatever. And it had all the old-fashioned TVs. It just looked very creepy on the inside. It's just a very creepy-looking building. And I just really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic.
Your number three.
My number three is actually, for as much as I didn't like the visual effects of the Wire actually, you know, sucking
yes.
a person's face off,
mm-hmm.
once the face was off,
yeah,
the quality of how that looked, you know, if you imagine how they probably would have done it in Classic Who, you know, you probably would have been able to see, you know, the lines around the edge of the face where they put on a prosthetic, or,
yes,
or
it would have been just
thin enough to where you kind of still could see their face through it. You really couldn't do that in this episode. And I couldn't tell if that was CG or if that was an actual practical effect.
May I chime in?
Please chime in.
I think it was actually because in the outtakes with Rose, at least, it was, she had all the dots on her face, so it was like a CG effect.
Oh, like a motion capture.
Yeah, because I would assume if he didn't have to look at her like she didn't have a face, but he could see her face, he wouldn't have laughed as much.
Right, yeah, a lot of times you make eye contact with somebody, boom, there, you're laughing.
Yes.
That's true, I didn't even think about that. That's a very good point.
So I believe that's...
You know what? Hey, hats off, it was really well done.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
In that same scene that you were referencing, they almost looked like Autons, the plastic.
Yes.
Villains. They almost kind of looked like that, just with no faces.
Yes. Wow, they kind of did. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. We have spoken a lot about The Wire, and I actually found The Wire to be delightfully evil and creepy at times, but, you know, also the hungry thing and... That was pretty funny. I loved almost the big reveal when she turns color. I thought that was funny because that
was pretty cool, huh?
That guy freaks out and he's like, oh my God, color. And the death scene of The Wire I thought was great when she screams and it turns into like the sign off noise.
Yes.
Which was...
That was a nice touch.
Yes, and I almost wonder if we're supposed to believe, because who does this sometimes where they, they'll quote-unquote rewrite history a little bit with the reason there's that Shakespeare play is missing is because it was cursed, you know, that whole thing.
Right, yeah.
So I almost wonder if we're supposed to believe that the wire is that noise at the end of every broadcast trying to, like, call out or something.
Like she's stuck
somehow
in that,
yeah,
forever, like she can't escape, and that what we're hearing when a station ends its broadcast day is we're hearing her scream.
Yes.
Oh, I like that.
I always wonder if that's what it would be. I mean, that
I like that.
Leave it to Doctor Who to do that. That would be something that they would do.
Totally.
Yeah. So The Wire, although very funny, somewhat creepy and cool. One of my favorites, I must say. Your number two, sir.
My number two is, and I think I could be wrong. Correct me, Twitterverse. I think this was the first episode where we really kind of see the Doctor's fury, at least insofar as Tennant portrays it.
To this level, no. I mean, we get hints of it in the Christmas special.
Yep, I was thinking about that. That's true. But yeah, definitely not to this level.
But not like this controlled mega fury, yes.
Yeah, and he does such a great job. And again, it's one of those things where I think you're going to make reference to it in your number one, if I'm looking at the notes correctly. But there's just when he is that kind of angry, there's just like... This is going to sound really kind of abstract and bizarre, but there's just such a set to his jaw.
Yes, yes.
You know, he's so firm and stern, and I mean, it. I will admit, it like gives me chills.
It's very frightening.
And
it's also very frightening. Like, I do not want this man to fly off the handle at me.
Totally.
Something I never want to see. I never want David Tennant or this incarnation of the Doctor to be this angry at me ever in my entire life.
Well, I think you're safe with that. I think it'll just be on TV.
Oh, good. I was worried there for a second.
All right. What's your number two, man?
My number two is Tommy. Just the character of Tommy in general would make a great companion.
Oh, sure.
He has to overcome his overbearing father, who is a jerk, a complete jerk, and treats his mother like garbage and treats him like garbage. You know, he's willing to stand up for himself and his mother, you know, for he's willing to stand up for what he believes in, which is great. He's somewhat fearless. He's resourceful. I mean, he helped fix, and, you know, he helped fix timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, machiney thingy. Did that have a name? Did he name it?
I don't think it got a name.
Well, that's a shame.
That's why I called it the wire-trapping contraption.
Yes.
Because it repeats that.
And he, as Rose said, is clever enough to save the world. So I think he was great. And, you know, he even needs the little push at the end where he's like, I don't care about my dad. I just kind of want him to go away. And I think that's almost like a Rose and her dad kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's your dad. Go, you know, go tell him, yeah, he's a jerk, but, you know, he's your dad. And it kind of looks like he knows he screwed up real bad. But Tommy the character in general, great. I really, really liked him. And you know what? The mom was great too. Just very odd that you would see, and I guess this is 53, where you would see a family kind of break apart like that, I would assume.
You know, I mean, surely, I mean, it happened. I have no doubt.
Right. No, it definitely happened.
But yeah, to see a period in time that is not only very obviously patriarchal,
mm-hmm.
you know, yes. dad's in charge kind of thing, but to see a scene where the mother really stands up for herself like that and is like, no, no more of this. You know, what you're doing to me is not okay. You need to leave.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes I think probably what you would see in reality is not the dad getting kicked out, but the mother or the mother and the kids leaving.
Right.
And so this definitely puts the power more in the woman's hands and puts the woman in the position of power in terms of this, which again leads to kind of his like portrayal as, you know, somebody who's just really puffed up and is actually really weak.
Yes. Yeah. So Tommy is definitely my number two. Great character. Great little arc for sure. too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sub arc that I really enjoyed. And your number one.
My number one is, I could actually apply this number one to like any BBC period drama,
mm-hmm.
Any number of episodes of Doctor Who, is just the BBC's ability to set dress.
Yes.
Almost any period in history. It's mind-boggling what such a tiny island must have in terms of antiques and costumes and cars and their ability to take what was probably mid to late 2005
right
England, make it look like 1953 just through and through.
Their
level of detail is unbelievable. And you know, I'll watch an American show that's set in the 80s and it's like, okay, yeah, you got the cars, the buildings look 80s. Oh, hey, look at that thing in the background. You know, there's a monitor, stoplight or whatever. You know, obviously, those are LEDs or something. You're not going to get that with the BBC. Their attention to detail is almost excruciating in a good way.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I
love it.
I agree. It was looked very, very nice. And it almost, that one, when they're driving down the street, in the blue Vespa, it almost looked like that they've used that road before.
It's certainly possible.
It looked like the same street, and I don't know what streets in London look like, but it almost looked like the street that he runs down with the Olympic torch. It looked like that girl's block, kind of. I don't know.
Oh,
eerily similar. Maybe the TARDIS is tied to that block.
Kind of see that, but I don't think it was the same.
But yeah, I was really in it. Like I could tell that we were not in a certain, we weren't in 2006 for sure, and that was a great job by them, which was amazing. Let us talk about quite possibly one of my favorite scenes that I've seen in a while. I called it the Queen and Country scene.
Yes.
And it's the scene where the Conleys are trying to figure out what to do with the mom, basically. And Mr. Conley's yelling at everyone, naturally. And the doorbell rings, and the door opens, and the doctor and Rose are standing there. And Mr. Conley's like, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. And he pulls, I love that.
Just do the blah, blah, blah again. That was great.
Blah, blah, blah. from the minute he answers the door to the end of the scene when Rose leaves their home, it was amazing. Yes. I loved everything about that. I guess it's not really one scene. Let's just call it when they're in the house.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I thought the acting was brilliant. The pacing of the scene was great. The writing and the directing, everything was fantastic about it. I loved every second of it.
Absolutely. It is the standout scene.
I loved that they humiliated him in front of the wife and Tommy. I thought that was great. Huh. I love just everything about this scene was amazing. And he does the I am talking thing like a couple of times.
Yes.
And Tenet screams at him, and I'm not listening. And I thought that was amazing.
Oh, it's brilliant. And that's you know, part of what I was talking about with the doctor's fury.
Yes. Oh, yeah, he definitely. You
know, you totally see that.
Now tell me what's going on. I can help. Oh, so good. It had comedy. Oh, it had good. Everything.
Yeah, it had comedy. It had, I loved how Rose is just like, no, wait, sorry, you've got the flag hung wrong.
Yes, yes.
And it's just like, damn, you know, you are grabbing, you know, somebody who obviously, you know, feels very patriotic by the cojones.
Yes, definitely.
And being like, uh-huh, I'm questioning your patriotism. I mean, think about doing that in America.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And the veritable S storm that would
result. Yes, definitely. But this could be one of my favorite Doctor Who scenes I've seen in a while, just where I enjoyed everything. Another modern scene that stands out with me is it was a Matt Smith scene with Clara. It was the I have a plan, do you have a plan scene with the umbrella, the snowman.
Oh.
When they're on the roof and she pulls down the ladder. I think that was another scene that I was just like, yes, I'm totally on board with this. And that scene made me feel the same way when I was watching this scene. Like, yes, this is teamwork. And it's great. I just, yeah, really loved it.
Yeah, it was there. There's, I couldn't even list everything that's great. Like the whole, like, oh, that's women's work.
Yes.
And then calling him on it because it's like, the queen's a woman.
Yeah, is the queen the woman? Would the queen do this work?
Exactly. It's just like,
oh man, so good.
Shutting you down, bro.
And then when the, I guess the cops bust in, and Tenet, before he gets punched, he says something like, I can't remember the exact line, but it's a great quote where he says, now you get, listen to me, I'm about to say something that is either, it's like, he says it's either very profound or I can't remember what it is, and he gets punched in the face and gets knocked out for a little bit. He gets knocked out for a little bit, and Rose tries to wake him up, and when he wakes up, he goes, oh, hell of a right hook, and then gets up and then just walks. Oh, I hell of a right hook, I have to watch for that next time, and gets up and runs down the stairs. And it's just great.
That's so good.
Great scene. Just a fun episode. I'm glad we watched this episode.
Yeah. It was a good call. I mean, there were definitely, and there are, other great episodes in that second season that we could have tackled. But I think this is good. I think this was one that doesn't get, I think, a whole lot of recognition, and it really deserves it.
I agree. I agree on all points. Now, Taylor, would you like to let the people know what we will be discussing next time?
Next time on Podcastica. we are actually going to go ahead and do the next episode immediately after Idiot's Lantern. We are doing the two-parter of The Impossible Planet / The Satan Pit, which I only suggested to John because I got through watching Idiot's Lantern and I saw the next week.
Yes, I saw the next week
too. I was like, oh my God, I forgot how good that episode was. We should do this one.
Yeah, well.
And John's like, well, but we already told him we're doing Idiot's Lantern. Let's do that one next. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm easy.
Why not? I mean, it's our show. We can do what we please. So, yeah, that is what we will be doing next time. If you would go on over to Facebook.com and search Podcastica and look for some Gallifreyan writing and like that page, we would appreciate it. We're trying to be more active on there, post some fun little things. You can follow us on Twitter at ThePodcastica, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter at SirPingle, and you can follow Taylor on Twitter
at BusBuddha.
If you would subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher, that would be amazing. Just search Podcastica and look for some Gallifreyan writing and rate and review us as well. A huge shout out to the Y-Axes. They do our music and we appreciate them. And you can follow them on Twitter at the Y-Axes. You can like their Facebook page, facebook.com/theYaxes. And also check out theyaxes.bandcamp.com. They're also on Spotify. I will put all that fantastic information in the show notes for you. And when in doubt, head on over to notlg.com/store and buy a shirt, people. We have a Podcastica shirt. It's pretty cool looking. Taylor, do you have anything else that you would like to plug before we sign off?
Oh, just the same as always. You know, if you like music and you like a little something to get you through the day, hop over to facebook.com/mudragradio. Check that out. Monthly music mix that I do. I actually just got the files for Mudcast 48.
Ooh.
It's coming in the beginning of August, and at least for me, it is a total throwback to high school. Some pretty choice 90s tunes.
Nice. And you might even hear my voice on there.
You will. You will definitely hear John's voice in Mudcast 48. I'm just going to say that right now.
Excellent. Yeah, I gotta check those out there. So I think that is about it for us this week. We will see you guys in a week or two, and we will review those episodes. And thank you for listening.
We'll catch you later.
Living.